fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, welcome to all of you, and welcome to me. Welcome back to the show. I am back live in the chair hosting the Cale Clark Show. Back in the hizzy. Yep, I've been away for a few days, as you know, on PTO. That stands for personal time off. I was doing some work stuff, too. I'll tell you about that. But you can call in right now, 1-888-914-9149. That's a toll-free line to call to talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And once again, so glad to be with you. You can also, of course, email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. I've actually got a dandy mailbag question that was emailed to me at Cale at relevantradio.com, which I'll be sharing with you, hopefully time permitting, in the show. But if we don't get to it today, we'll get to it tomorrow on Holy Thursday. And yes, we are going to have a live show, I am told, tomorrow on Holy Thursday. So before you go to the Mass of the Lord's Supper, you can check out the Cale Clark Show. We'll be talking about Holy Thursday as well and all the things that you need to know. And you can also follow me on Twitter, by the way, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. And that's run by producer Jim. And producer Jim Shaper, I actually met him in the flesh last week in Chicago. I was down there for some meetings at the Chicago headquarters of Relevant Radio. So I got to meet Jim in person, got to meet Patrick Alog, who screens calls for us on a regular basis. Nick Senevich is in tonight for the first few minutes, so if you call, you'll hear Nick. Nick has been promising me for years that he's going to take me out for tavern-style pizza in Chicago, and he has yet to fulfill that promise. So you can give him an earful when you call in, 1-888-914-9149. But yeah, we had some meetings at the Chicago headquarters. I got to actually hang out with Patrick Madrid. The first time I've seen him in the flesh in 6 years. In 6 years. I hadn't seen Patrick since 2016. He looks the exact same. I did post a picture. Maybe you guys saw this on my Twitter account, at Cale Clark. Patrick and I were having dinner together at the Outback Steakhouse, and I captioned it, just two dudes chewing the fat. And then he responded back and said, I'm glad you didn't say two fat dudes chewing. Although that certainly would have applied, at least in my case. But I got a lot of blowback on that dinner. A lot of people saying, hey, it was Taco Tuesday, and he takes you to Outback. You know, well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with Outback. So don't throw any shade at Outback. I like it. I love it. And how do you know that we weren't having steak tacos as well? You don't know that. You don't know that. But it was really good. I had a great time hanging out with Patrick. There's an Outback in the basement of his hotel. So it was very convenient. Very convenient indeed. But I got to see Father Rocky. You might have seen on the Relevant Radio Facebook page and on Twitter, there was a photo that was posted of myself, Father Rocky, also Timory. Timory was there too. I saw Timory for the first time since 2016. And then I saw Josh Raymond, of course, the host of The Inner Life, was there. Margaret Kleinschmidt, who co-hosts the Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky, she was there too, along with, of course, Patrick Madrid. And we had a really, really good meeting together. It was the first time that so many hosts were gathered. We were only missing, really, a few people. John Morales, notably, for Morning Air. Also, Drew Mariani, for some reason, wasn't there. I still have yet to meet Drew in the flesh. So, Drew, if you're listening, we have to rectify that soon. Really, really soon. But it was cool. I saw the new building, the new incredible studio that Relevant Radio is building out. I got to see the showcase studio. I think we're in the home stretch in terms of completion. It's kind of really nice and closed in glass. So one day I hope to be able to travel there and do the show from there. And maybe there'll be tour groups of, I don't know, kids banging on the window, you know, banging on the glass as I'm trying to do the show. It's like kind of watching a goldfish in the bowl. You know, who is this guy? But no, it was really great. It was really great. And I took advantage of the time after some meetings there. I'm giving you my travel itinerary. I hope I'm not boring you with. And I had for breakfast that day. No, we won't go there. But I did take a side trip to take some PTO, which I hadn't done yet this year. And I wanted to visit my parents, who are snowbirds. They're still in Florida. So I got a really inexpensive flight from Chicago down to Florida. Went to see them for a couple of days. And I also popped down to see some friends at Ave Maria University. They don't actually attend the university, but Ave Maria University, one of our big partners here at Relevant Radio, big sponsor of our programs. They do such incredible stuff down there. So many great professors down there. And it's a beautiful, if you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. And if you've never been there, you should check it out. If you ever get a chance to go to Florida, visit Ave Maria, the town, as well as the university. It's outside of Naples, and it's just incredible, the development that's going on there. And it's just a beautiful community. It's very walkable. And I was visiting my friends, Josh and Lisa Canning. They used to live in Toronto, and now they live down there. They've been living there since 2018. So I went to see their place and their family with their 8 children, and we just had a wonderful time. And it was great because you could actually walk from their house to this beautiful, beautiful church that's on the Ave Maria campus. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous facility. And it really reminded me of growing up, in the sense that they can let their kids just kind of go out and play with the neighborhood kids, not have to worry too much about their safety. They can just kind of be like Huck Finn, I guess, and have their adventures and, you know, just come home in 2 hours. And it's kind of fine. Everybody knows each other. It's really an interesting community, and it's just a great pace of life. And so while I was visiting with them, we started talking about what's going on in the church. We touched on a problem that I think personally is maybe the number one problem in the church today. I know there are a lot of problems in the church today, as you know, but that's okay. That's okay. God is still in control. The problems aren't okay. We need to work on those. But we did talk about what I would consider to be the biggest problem in the church today. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It's a word that, you know, sounds kind of, maybe you've never heard this term, but it's called clericalism. Clericalism. Now, what is clericalism? I'm going to tell you in just a minute. And it has to do with us as lay people. It has to do with us as lay people and our role in the church, what God's plan for us is in the church. And a lot of times we don't know what that is. We have to figure this out. And this is one of the reasons why the church has been, maybe the biggest reason why the church has been so ineffective in the world. There's certainly good things going on, don't get me wrong, but evangelization should be happening at a much greater level than what it actually is. And that's really the mission of Relevant Radio, to bring Christ to the world through the media. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. And we were talking about this issue of clericalism, and actually, my friend Josh Canning, he actually wrote a blog about this. We'll post a link to it. Jim, I'll send this to you, and you can post it in the show notes. A few years ago on his site, he posted a little essay that he wrote about how we so desperately need a new vision for the laity. And he said, I wrote about this, and he sent me an article. This particular article that I just mentioned, I checked it out. I thought I read it, and I thought it was really good, and I thought I'd share some of the insights that he had with you. And he sort of starts off the piece, my friend Josh Canning, he's been on the program before, talking about how he and his wife were at a church in the Toronto area when they lived there at the time. And they passed by a beautiful statue outside the church. And I know what church it is, and I've seen the statue, so I know what he's talking about. It's a statue of Our Lady holding the Christ child, and there's a plaque on the base of the statue with the inscription that says, "In thanksgiving for our priests." And Josh's wife, Lisa, commented on the statue, how beautiful it was. And Josh said to her, "Oh, I agree with that. It's a beautiful statue. It's a wonderful sentiment. You know, we need to thank God for our priests. But wouldn't it be amazing to see a statue like that honoring the laity? Have you ever seen a statue in honor of the laity? I haven't. And Lisa looked at Josh, and at first she kind of laughed, but then she got kind of emotional about it. And she said, "Yeah, oh man, we so badly need to think differently about ourselves as lay people." And by the way, this is not at all a shot at priests. So we're going to talk about the priesthood. We all love our priests. The priesthood is something that was instituted by Jesus Christ. And of course, it happened on Holy Thursday at the Last Supper. The Last Supper was not only the first Mass, it's not only when Jesus instituted the Eucharist, but he also, of course, instituted the priesthood to confect that Eucharist. Do this in remembrance of me. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, because obviously Holy Orders is a hugely important sacrament. It's absolutely crucial. And we need to understand the dignity, the sanctity that the ordained priesthood calls men to, who have that vocation. And it really is different. There is a difference between the baptismal priesthood of the faithful. We do share, all of us share in the priesthood of Christ by means of our baptism. We share in his offices of priest, prophet, and king by means of our baptism. But the ministerial priesthood does bring about what theologians call an ontological change, which is a $5 word, which basically means a change of being. There is an indelible change that happens in the soul of the man who is ordained to holy orders, and God configures that man to Christ the priest, to be able to do things that only Christ the priest can do, such as when you go to confession. When Father Joe or Father Rocky or whoever says, I absolve you of your sins, it's not that person, that's not Father Rocky who's absolving you of your sins, it's Jesus Christ. He's borrowing the vocal cords of Father Rocky. And that's something that we have to remember. And it's such a powerful change to that individual that never goes away. It's never abrogated. It's never taken away, even if the priest is laicized. And not all priests are laicized for horrible reasons, or they committed some terrible sin. And sadly, there's been way too much of that, especially in recent times. But even if, heaven forbid, and tragically, I do think this does happen. I think it was St. John Chrysostom who said that the road to hell is paved with the skulls of bishops and priests who are unfaithful. And that's a horrible thought. We need to pray for our priests. It's one of the reasons why we need to pray for our priests and bishops. But even if a priest doesn't make it to his eternal destination, and all of us, of course, are called to the glories of heaven, that's God's desire. And St. Paul says this in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4. His desire is that all people would be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. But because of human freedom, because of sinfulness, it can turn away from God's will. It's not God's design. But even if a priest would be, let's say, in hell and unfaithful to his vocation, unfaithful to his vows, guess what? That ontological change to his soul, it's still there. Much as when even a baptized layperson, if they don't make it to heaven, if they don't stay in Christ's friendship, if they die and not being in a state of grace, then guess what? That indelible mark on their soul from baptism is still there, that they were destined for so much more and they didn't make it. That's an awfully frightening thought, but it should spur us more to faithfulness. But so in talking about this whole subject of clericalism, in no way do I mean to malign the priesthood in any way, shape, or form. We all love the priests. We all love our bishops. But there has been an illness in the church for centuries. I think it's starting to be cured. I think the cure is starting to proliferate. It's starting to spread in the body of Christ. The cells of the body are getting healthier and healthier. But clericalism is something that has been besetting the church probably since the time that Christianity became legal in the Roman Empire. That's probably when it kind of started. The church went from being underground, persecuted, so many martyrs, to being the official religion of the empire. Now, anybody who was anybody wanted to, unfortunately, sometimes for human reasons, get involved in the hierarchy of the church. And this term of clericalism has been used to sort of advocate for all kinds of different positions, such as women priests, those who would want to see women ordained to the priesthood, which is an impossibility, by the way. But here's what it actually is all about. And in his piece, Josh Canning refers to the writings of Russell Shaw. Russell Shaw is a very good writer who talks from a layperson's perspective about the call of the layperson. Here's what he says about clericalism. This is Russell Shaw, and it's a quote from him. He says, quote, "In general terms, clericalism is an attitude. It's a state of mind that takes the clerical vocation and state in life to be both superior to and normative for all other Christian vocations and states of life." Okay, so clerics. Now, who are clerics? We talk about clericalism, we're talking about clerics. And oddly enough, my last name, Clark, actually means cleric, but I'm not a cleric. I have the common priesthood of the baptized, but that's it. So, no, clerics, who are primarily, of course, bishops and priests, and of course, there are deacons as well, they're part of the clergy, but they are the active, according to Russell Shaw, they're the active dominant element in the church. It's they who make the decisions, they who give the orders, and who exercise command. In the scheme of things, the role of the laity is to receive the orders, and if they're faithful members of the church, to do as they're told. End of quote. And it's true that the church is organized very much like an army. The ultimate general at the top, of course, is the Pope. But that brings about, of course, connotations and images of power. But there is power given to leaders in the church, but it should be power to serve. And this is what happens. We're going to talk about this tomorrow, too, in the context of the Last Supper. Jesus talks to them about what true leadership and true power in the church is about, this power to serve. He says, the Son of Man did not come to serve. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And he kind of demonstrated that at the Last Supper, of course, by wrapping a towel around his waist and doing the dirtiest job out there, which is washing the feet of people, which is very common. You do that before a meal when someone enters your home in the ancient world. It's pretty dusty out there, your sandals, all that stuff. So he takes the, and that's why Peter says, Lord, I'm not going to let you do this. I'm not going to let you do this because this is demeaning for you. This is too servile for you. This is not befitting for you as the Messiah, as our master. He says, no, Peter, if you don't let me wash your feet, then you have nothing to do with me. And Peter says, well then I do my whole body too. You know, it would just hose me down because I don't want to be separated from you. Do my head, my hands, everything. So this is really service in the church. It's an inverted pyramid. So the person at the top, the Pope, one of his favorite titles, Servus Servorum Dei. And of course, that means servant of the servants of God. So it's like a triangle upside down. You've got more people above you to serve, more feet to wash. That's the way it should be looked at. But what happens is with clericalism, this ideal gets distorted. It gets distorted. And clerics do become, they have this temptation to become like military leaders or like secular bosses and kind of tell people what to do. And this is not in keeping with the mission of the laity, because really what is the role of the laity? This may be too simplistic, but I think the job of the clergy ultimately is to help sanctify the laity so the laity can then go out and sanctify the world, because we're the ones living in the middle of the world. This is what it's all about, because we can go where Father Rocky, Father Jim, Father whoever can't go, into the workplace, into the cubicle, into schools, into the everyday working world, and bring the light of Christ there. And I remember I met a retired bishop, now retired, but he wasn't at the time. And he was kind of a hero fighting for marriage a few years ago when the big topic was, is same-sex marriage going to be legalized? And he was fighting for traditional marriage. And he became kind of a figurehead in that movement of fighting for traditional marriage, fighting for the God-given relationship between man and woman. And I went to a talk that he gave, and after the talk, I was sitting around chatting with him and a couple other people, and one of the things that the bishop said was that, man, I really shouldn't be the one leading this movement. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, this isn't even my sacrament. By that he meant marriage, right? It's my sacrament is holy orders, right, in terms of my particular calling. And those are the two sacraments of service in the church. Of course, marriage, holy orders. Holy orders to serve God's people, and marriage to kind of make God's people in a certain sense, right? Because there's two ways to become a Catholic. You're either born into it or you become a convert. And as you know, if you're a convert, it's a long and winding road. It's not always easy. And so those are the sacraments of service. And he said, you know, my sacrament is really holy orders. It should be really married lay people leading the charge on this. And many did. But we as laity, we're in the workplace, we're in civil life, we're in politics. Priests can't run for political office, or at least they shouldn't. It did happen a few years ago in Canada, in Quebec. There was a priest who did run for a political party, and he was kind of, guys, his bishop had to crack down on him, of course. But we can do that. We can make a change. We can get into the heart of the business world, the heart of education, the heart of the community. And so this is really what it's all about. And this clericalism happens sometimes not only as a temptation for the clergy to sort of boss around the layperson, you know, that they must simply pray, pay, and obey, rather than, you know, help them discover what God's calling them to do in the world in their particular role. But the other way that clericalism can kind of rear its ugly head is with lay people who want to take on sort of roles that are proper to the clergy, where clergy want to be lay people, and sometimes lay people want to be priests. You know, don't call me father, call me Larry. Sometimes the lay people as well kind of want to I call them sacristy Catholics, and there's nothing wrong with helping out with your local parish in various capacities, helping to serve at Mass, whatever the case may be. But a lot of people think this is it. Like, if I can just do this, if I can get into a liturgical kind of function, this is the pinnacle of what the layperson is called to in the church. Well, this is what Pope Francis said about this. We're going to take a quick break in a second. But this is what Pope Francis talked about this. He called it, quote, sinful complicity. Sinful complicity. Listen to this quote. He said, "It is one of the evils of the church, but it is a complicit evil, because priests take pleasure in the temptation to clericalize the laity. But many of the laity are on their knees asking to be clericalized because it is more comfortable. It is more comfortable. This is a double sin." End of quote. Wow, that quote is straight fire from Pope Francis. This idea that a lot of lay people want to be clericalized because they think this is it. Like, if I can kind of get as close as I can to the priestly function, then I've kind of arrived. You know, the closer I can get to the hierarchy and their functions, I've kind of arrived. No. And it is more comfortable in a sense than, and sometimes it's easier than actually going out into the world and trying to evangelize through your life. Let Christ live his life through you in the world. It's sometimes easier to, quote unquote, hide in the church. And I'm not saying everybody gets involved in these ministries to do that, but this is the temptation. I think Pope Francis was right to put his finger on that. And so when we come back from the break, I'm going to give you three antidotes to clericalism, how we can get out of this. And I think it's going to be really instructive. So hang with me. If you want to call in, if you have a take on this, 888-914-9149, you can call in. Be right back. Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Coming up, I'm going to share with you the spiritual insight that helps Scottie Scheffler win the Masters. I was away during the Masters. I still got to watch it, but I didn't get to talk to you about it. And this is a really spiritually uplifting story. I'm going to share that with you in just a couple minutes. But I just want to finish up what we were talking about before the break. We're talking about the besetting issue of clericalism in the church. The priesthood is so crucial, of course, but when priests want to be lay people and assume their role, and lay people want to assume the role of the clergy, that's a recipe for disaster. And my friend Josh Canning, in his little post about this that he wrote, talked about really a few different ways that we can kick clericalism to the curb. And the first thing we need to do is accept that it does exist, and it has affected all of us in some way. And Russell Shaw, I don't know why I'm having trouble saying his name, Russell Shaw, but Russell Shaw, he says it's kind of like when you're sick. And when you've been sick for a long time, and you kind of get used to being sick, eventually you start thinking, this is just normal. This is just the way it is. And you stop realizing, no, this is not the way it's supposed to be. And sometimes you put off going to the doctor because you just kind of get used to that condition. And it is kind of an illness. And so we kind of have to ask ourselves, as my friend Josh says, the question isn't, is my parish clericalized? It's how much is it clericalized? So we need, again, it's something that the church is starting to come out of. I think Vatican II really helped in that regard, because really, if you want to say if you could tweet the message of Vatican II, if you could summarize it in one sentence, what would it be? Probably the universal call to holiness. That's what I would say, that every single one of us is called to the heights of holiness, to sanctity. But again, even just a few decades before the council, that message was met with hostility in countries like Spain, a very Catholic country, and St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei. And that's really the key to his message, that, you know, the call to sanctity, that we can achieve holiness in the middle of the world. That was considered a radical message in Spain in the late 1920s, early 1930s, when he was operating. And for those of you that don't know, and this is a good history lesson, something to look up, many people are unaware of the bloody civil war that took place in Spain in the 1930s, where Catholics were being murdered, priests were being hung in the streets, shot. Thousands of Catholics were killed. This is one of the bloodiest, tragic persecutions of the church in history. A lot of people don't know about it. It happened in the 20th century. But when St. Jose Maria Escrivá, as a young priest, when he was only 28 years old, received this call from God, he didn't know. He knew God was calling him to do something, but he didn't quite know what it was. And he had prayed for years, ever since he was young, Lord, let me see, you know, and Our Lady, let it be, you know, just reveal this to me. And finally, it was revealed to him on October the 2nd, 1928. And as he had a spiritual director at the time who was a Jesuit. Now, not all Jesuits are bad. I just want to say this right off the top, okay? So not all Jesuits are bad. There are a lot of good, holy Jesuits out there. At that time in Spain, this concept, first of all, any sort of promising young Catholic guy who, you know, seemed like he had a great prayer life or any kind of devotional life, the Jesuits would kind of target in on these guys, say, man, this guy should become a Jesuit. And so St. Jose Maria, when he went to his spiritual director, who was a Jesuit priest, he was actually the guy who coined the term Opus Dei, which means the work of God. And St. Jose Maria didn't know what to call it. And the priest asked him one time in direction, hey, how's that Opus Dei going? How's that work of God going that you keep talking about? He said, oh, that's actually a good name. That's a good title. I should use that. I think I'm going to use that. But this guy eventually, even though he was St. Jose Maria's friend, he turned on him and became a persecutor. And a lot of the wild rumors that people hear about Opus Dei, stuff that got in the Da Vinci Code, for example, a lot of those rumors started with the Jesuits in Spain in the 1930s, because they were upset that a lot of these young guys that they kind of had their eye on, they could become Jesuits. They had met St. Jose Maria, and he revealed to them, hey, you could actually live for Christ, become a saint in the middle of the world. If you're studying to be an architect, you don't necessarily have to leave that. If God calls you to do something else, fine, but you can become holy as a family man, as a husband, as a father, as a layperson, even a single layperson, as a teacher, as a doctor, as a fireman, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever God calls you to do, you should pursue that. But every single person is called to holiness. And some guys who were considering joining the Jesuits, they actually got involved with Opus Dei instead. And so a lot of wild rumors were spread by some Jesuits about Opus Dei, because they would tell parents, hey, your son's getting involved with this guy. He's a heretic. Jose Maria, you avoid this guy. Now, he's now a canonized saint. I think that should hopefully put to rest a lot of these rumors, but it doesn't for some people. But a lot of the crazy stuff actually is traced back to that, all these wild rumors. And Opus Dei, of course, is one path to that universal call to holiness that we're all called to. It's a specification of the baptismal call to holiness that we all have. It's just kind of, this is how people who are called to the vocation of Opus Dei, this is how they pursue that. Everyone's called to holiness. Well, how am I going to do that? What's my game plan? Well, that's one way to do it. But St. Jose Maria always said, hey, what I'm preaching here is nothing new. This is the early church. This is what the early church preached. It's nothing, it's as old as the gospel and yet as ever new as the gospel. Because this is how the early Christians lived. Everyone was trying to become a saint. And so we all have different roles in the church. Some are called to become priests and eventually bishops. But some are called to remain in the middle of the world, and that's where God wants them to be, and they can achieve sanctity there. So it does affect everybody, and we have to understand that and just be aware of it. And I think one of the things that we have to do is shift the paradigm of how lay people and the hierarchy, the clergy, kind of connect. And Pope Benedict actually coined a new term for this, and Josh mentions this in his article. He called it co-responsibility. Co-responsibility. Here's what Pope Benedict said. I'm going to quote the Pope here, the Pope Emeritus Benedict. the 16th, he said, co-responsibility demands a change in mindset, especially concerning the role of lay people in the church. They should not be regarded as collaborators of the clergy, but rather as people who are really co-responsible for the church's being and acting. So that's interesting. So, hey, you're not simply to be sort of an add-on to the message and the role of the clergy, but you have to understand that you're responsible for the church in the world. That's really, I think, what he was trying to say, the way the church is in the world, how it is, how it acts as leaven in the society. And so that you've got to be clear on your mission, and I think that's really, really important. And so this is something that we need to work on. I think it's something we need to address. And I thought, because tomorrow we're going to be obviously celebrating the priesthood, and obviously it's crucial to God's mission in the church, but most of us are not called to the clergy. The vast majority of us are in the middle of the world. And we have to understand that God has called us there. And as Josh said, he kind of closed out his article by saying, hey, maybe one day we'll see some beautiful Marian statues in thanksgiving for the priesthood, like the one he saw. And then maybe there'll be next to it a statue of St. Joseph in thanksgiving for the laity. And wouldn't that be cool? That would be a very happy marriage indeed. You're listening to The K.O. Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. Dr. Tom. Dr. Tom is calling from beautiful San Diego, California. Hello, Dr. Tom. What's your question?
Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm well, sir. Yourself?
Well, I'm a little upset, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Here's the situation. This past Saturday evening at the Vigil Mass, they did the hymns, they did the homily, everything. Mm-hmm. And during the last 30 seconds, of the service, the deacon gets up and says, there will be no confessions for the next 3 weeks.
Now, what?
That includes this coming Sunday, and naturally, the Divine Mercy Sunday, and the Sunday after that. And I don't know what's going on.
That is highly unusual, Dr. Tom. Good grief. I mean, no confessions for 3 weeks, including Holy Week? That's a blunder. I'm not sure what the reasoning is behind that, but I'm sure the pastor would be able to fill us in on that, but it sounds like you don't really know either. But this is one of the times in people's lives when they're open to spiritual things, when they might not otherwise be. Obviously, Holy Week, Christmas time, we could throw that in as well. A lot of people who don't normally come to Mass are thinking about going back and maybe thinking about going to confession for the first time in maybe a long time. And it's very tempting to, and some people want to sort of make light of that, call them C&E Catholics, Christmas and Easter. They wouldn't recognize the place without the Easter lilies or the poinsettias at Christmas time. But I think we should just be thankful that they're coming back. And we don't want to leave them in that place. We want to help them to get closer to God. And it's all about helping people take that next step, whatever that is. What's the next step? And all of us have to take a next step, no matter how holy we are, no matter how close to sanctity we are. The greatest saints in the world always saw the shadows in the world. The closer you get to the light, the more you see the shadows. And so they always thought they had work to do. And this would be prime time, I would think, to have confessions, maybe have some extra times for confessions. Because people are, they will go. It's been proven time and time again. If priests offer confessional times that are convenient for people, they will come. They will show up, guaranteed, because as long as they know about it. And so that to me just boggles the mind. I would suggest maybe getting in touch with your bishop. Perhaps that might be an avenue to look at. I don't know. I don't understand the logic there at all. I really don't. So thank you very much for that call, Dr. Tom, and I do hope you have a very happy and holy Triduum and happy and holy Easter as well. And speaking of that, tomorrow you're not going to want to miss this on the Faith Explained program, because, of course, on Holy Thursday there is no Mass celebrated during the day. There's only the Mass of the Lord's Supper in the evening. So there's not going to be a noon Mass at Relevant Radio, noon Central, as usual, but we are going to have a special hour-long edition of The Faith Explained. It's going to be called The Truth of the Triduum. And the Triduum is, of course, this most holy season in the church, which begins with the Mass of the Lord's Supper on Holy Thursday, ends, of course, with the celebration of Easter Sunday. And really, the Easter Sunday lasts for a whole week. It's the octave. It's an eight-day feast. It's like one big Easter day during the octave of Easter. But it's the holiest time in the year for the church. And we're going to be talking about the truth of that from a biblical, from a historical perspective. Everything from the Last Supper to Good Friday to the death, the burial, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You're not going to want to miss this. This is going to be happening tomorrow, special time, 12 noon Central on Relevant Radio. We're going to take a quick break right now, but when I come back, you're not going to want to miss this story. It's a great story about how a good cry and a good wife and a good pep talk as well, a good spiritual pep talk, can do wonders for us. It did for Scotty Scheffler, helped him win the green jacket. Going to have that right after the break on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Be right back. From the Relevant Radio Studios, we so proudly present The Cale Clark Show. Hello, friends. I'm Cale Clark. Along with producer Jim Shaper, we're proud to bring you today's coverage. And I don't have a green jacket for you, but I do have a great story. By the way, who doesn't want to be Jim Nance? My goodness, that guy's living his best life, the life of Riley. He goes from broadcasting the Final Four to the Masters. Wow. Oh, man. I don't want to trade places with anybody, but it's tempting to want to. Never be jealous of anyone. Never be jealous of anyone, because if you want to trade places with them, you have to get the totality of their life, no matter what that might entail on different levels, and you might not want that. So be happy that you're you. God has a plan for your life. And speaking of that, Scotty Scheffler, who won the Masters this year, a lot of people didn't know who he was before last weekend. People are finding out who he is, and he seems like a great dude. He really, really does. And I love watching the Masters. It's such a highlight. And I was able to watch the final round with my parents when I was away, and being able to watch it with my dad was really special. In particular, I love to play golf with my dad. And I don't know if you guys know Wright Thompson. Wright Thompson is an essayist for ESPN, a great writer. And his name is spelled W-R-I-G-H-T, Wright Thompson, but he can really write. Wright can really write, okay? W-R-I-T-E. And he talked about, I don't know if you saw this essay, but he talked about the problem that golf really has today, and that it's kind of it's a popular niche sport. Let's face it. It's not one of the big four sports, but it is pretty popular. But most people who are kind of casual fans of the sport don't really care about it unless Tiger's involved. And I love Tiger. I mean, he's my favorite golfer. He certainly had, a personal journey that's had its problems, of course. But like all of us, he's trying to fight his way through it. And ratings were at all-time highs on Thursday and Friday because he was kind of in the tournament, kind of in contention for a little while. And Wright Thompson talked about how, unfortunately, the problem with golf right now is that more people care about whether or not a 46-year-old man, that's Tiger, can hobble around the course, in one piece and get through the round, than they do about the game's young stars. And one of my coworkers told me during the Masters, I can't tell the difference between Scotty Scheffler and Xander Schauffele. And that is the problem for a lot of casual golf fans. And who is Scotty Scheffler? Well, not only is he the Masters champion, but he was even coming into the tournament the number one player in the world. He had a meteoric rise. And it all happened since February, the day of the Super Bowl. He won the Phoenix Waste Management Open on Super Bowl Sunday. It's the rowdiest golf tournament in the world. He followed that up with a win at the Arnold Palmer Tournament, the Arnold Palmer Invitational in Orlando. And then he won the match play, the Dell Technologies Match Play. Got to give the sponsor some credit. The Dell Technologies Match Play Tournament in March. And that's kind of the PGA Tour's version of March Madness. And then he comes to the Masters. So that match play win got him to number one in the world. So He's the world's best player according to the rankings, but he was a 40-1 underdog according to the Vegas sportsbooks going into the Masters. That turned out to be a pretty good bet if you took that bet. He won in a very steady performance on that Sunday under enormous pressure. Now, the Masters really the Masters pressure is probably like no other tournament. And at his post-victory press conference, after he got the green jacket, Scottie Scheffler talked about what he was going through, especially the morning of the tournament, knowing he had the lead going into the final round and how he dealt with that. And I just found this so honest and so refreshing. And there's a big spiritual lesson here. So check out this clip. This is Scottie Scheffler at the Augusta National Golf Club at his press conference.
Scottie, how did you handle the late tee time today? What did you do last night? What did you do this morning? And how many episodes of The Office did you watch?
You know, last night was pretty easy. I was tired. We went and got some food. I spilled my dinner in the car on the way home. That was extraordinarily frustrating. You can see Meredith is still laughing at me. She thought it was the funniest thing ever. I didn't think it was so funny at the time. And so last night was fine. This morning was a totally different story. I cried like a baby this morning. I was so stressed out. I didn't know what to do. I was sitting there. I was telling Meredith. I was like, I don't think I'm ready for this. You know, I'm not ready. I go, I don't feel like I'm ready for this kind of stuff. And I just felt overwhelmed. And so she told me, who are you to say that you're not ready? Who am I to say that I know what's best for my life? And so for what we talked about is, you know, that God is in control and, you know, the Lord is leading me. And if today's my time, then it's my time. And if, you know, I shot 82 today, you know, somehow I was going to use it for his glory. And gosh, it was a long morning. It was long.
Did you calm down at any point?
I think when she made me some more food, had a big breakfast. My stomach has been hurting for like 2 days straight. And so I would say I calmed down when I got to the course. You know, right when I got to the training room and started working with Troy, I was pretty calm.
Yeah, I just found that so refreshing. Scottie Scheffler, Masters champion. 25 years old, recently married to his wife, Meredith. You heard him talking about her. And I just, first of all, I can't imagine Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson or anybody in golf's upper echelon admitting that they felt so much pressure the day of, you know, the final round of a major tournament that they actually broke down in tears because they just didn't know how to handle it. They started crying. They would never say that, trust me. But he did. He did. I thought that was an incredible admission that he literally cried. But I thought it was really cool, too, that what his wife Meredith said to him. And it sounds like the Schefflers are evangelical Christians. Hope they'll find out about more about Catholicism. I don't know if they've looked into it or not. But I just thought this is a great example of, I think all the guys listening can probably identify. If you have the blessing of being married to a great Catholic gal, as I do, very often our wives are really good spiritual directors for us. I always say to people, hey, if you think you've arrived at sanctity, if you're ready for that statue, you're going to have your own stained glass window, ask your wife. Am I a saint? Yeah, she'll probably have some suggestions for you. Let's put it that way. And you know, I'm sure that the husbands do that for their wives as well. Honestly, my wife is such a good person. I don't know if there's anything I could really tell her, but we all have work to do, of course. But I just really thought it was cool how Meredith said to him, When he said, she's like, why are you crying? I don't know. I don't know if I can handle this because this is a big deal. If I win this, I'm going to go to the next level. You know, I'm going to be, there's going to be so much more expected of me. This is a big breakthrough to win. Yeah, I'm number one in the world, but if I win the Masters, this is you're in the history books and you're in a different place. Am I up for this challenge? And she said, you know, who are you to say that you're not ready for this? I thought that was such a cool perspective. Who are you to say that you're not ready for this? Maybe this is exactly where God wants you to be. This is exactly what God wants to glorify himself through you. So maybe he's brought you here for a purpose. And he said, wow, that just really calmed him down. And he said elsewhere, I didn't play this, but he said elsewhere that he thought that, hey, if he, maybe this wasn't the clip, I can't remember, but this idea that, hey, if I go out there and shoot 84 and just bomb, you know, and just blow the tournament, somehow I'll find a way to glorify God through that as well. And I think that's just a great perspective. And she had said to him also, this wasn't in the clip, but she said, hey, no matter what happens, Jesus still loves you. I love you. You're still going to be the same person that you were at the start of the round. So you've really got nothing to lose here. And that kind of calmed him down. And there's another clip that I saw about Scottie Scheffler that was really cool that they played during the Masters. After he became number one in the world after winning the match play tournament, his dad gave him a hug, you know, off the 18th green, and the microphones picked up what he said to him, and he said, "I love you, Scottie. I love you, but not for your golf, not for your golf, but for who you are, the man you've become." And I just thought, that is so great. That is so great. We all have to realize that we're loved for who we are. And it's great if parents can say that to their kids, by the way. If you're a parent, say it often. Tell your kids how proud you are of them. They need to hear it. It gives them so much confidence in life. But this is how God looks at us too. He doesn't look at us, doesn't judge us by what we do, but as who we are, as children of the Heavenly Father. And so I remember Tiger Woods saying that about his parents. And I know his dad had a lot of issues. I've talked about that before. He had a lot of problems. But having said that, nobody questions how much his mom and dad both loved him, Tiger Woods. And he used to say that when he was a kid, that's what enabled him to kind of go for it. He would really try to risk it. He would try to win because he knew that even if he failed at golf, even if he didn't win a tournament or, you know, whatever, even if he failed, he said, "I would always come home to love. I would always come home to love." And that kind of gave him the confidence to kind of go for it in life. He had that foundation. So I think that's really, really important. I thought that was also really, really neat from Scottie Scheffler winning the Masters. And it was really cool. So let's go take a quick call here from Will, calling from Gilbert, Arizona. Hello, Will.
Hi, Cale. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. So I just wanted to chime in on Dr. Tom's call.
Yes, sure.
I feel bad for him. Our parish starts today 12 hours, tomorrow 12 hours. Friday from 8 o'clock we go 24 hours.
Wow.
Confession. So yeah, I just feel bad for him because, to your point, you know, you gotta have people, priests available for confession for everybody, you know.
Yeah. That's incredible. 12 hours and then a 24 hours of confession the next day. Wow, marathon. So what a thanks for calling, Will. I appreciate that. What a juxtaposition to the previous caller, Dr. Tom in San Diego, who said that his parish is shutting down confessions for 3 weeks. That's unreal. That's unreal. And we need to get that sacrament out there. We need to have access to it. And it's just so life-changing, so freeing to be able to go to confession. I'm actually going to go tonight. I need to, believe me. And so it's important. We'll talk about how Jesus established the priesthood at the Last Supper. We need priests for confession. We need to pray for priests, pray that God will bring more priests. We need the vocation of the ladies. Well, we talked about that earlier in the show. So tomorrow on Holy Thursday, well, we're going to give you some interesting insights into the Last Supper, maybe some stuff that you've never heard of from an angle that you've never thought of before. I'm going to share that with you tomorrow on the Cale Clark Show. But don't forget the Truth of the Triduum, a special episode of the Faith Explained tomorrow, 12 noon Central, right here on Relevant Radio. Stay tuned for Timory and the Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky and Margaret. I'm Cale Clark. See you in the next one. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.